The Vault of Silliness has offered forth show highlights from December 10th and 11th, 1994. This episode is titled, Where's the Beef? And you'll know why when I tell you about the guests. It starts off with the caller talking to Norm about weather reports. Norm goes off on a rant and has a particular place where TV anchors with poor ad-libs can go. We then enjoy a Norm show open. Let me take a moment to acknowledge the comments I've received on Google Podcasts. Thank you, and to answer the latest question, I will plan a show where I play all the show opens as a treat for us all. After the open, there's zero reaction from the teen canteen. I mean crickets. Our first guest was Barnaby Conrad. He was an artist, bullfighter, nightclub, restaurant, saloon keeper back in the 50s and 60s, and author of many books, but at the time, his latest was Name Dropping, Tales from My Barbary Coast Saloon. The tape skips to the interview in progress. Norm just scratches the surface with Barnaby, but some of the names that are dropped are John Steinbeck, Bing Crosby, and Lenny Bruce. He was also co-director and founder of the Santa Barbara Writers Conference, and at the time, writing his 26th book. Fascinating guest. We get an extremely brief respite, and Jack Hart tells us all about the latest boxing card at Foxwoods. Our next guest was, well, I don't know his name. Norm's intro isn't included, nor is the last part where he would thank the guest. It doesn't take away from the enjoyment, though. It's about how the guest began to raise, breed, and sell buffalo on his 13,000-acre ranch. It's an interview filled with interesting info, including cooking prep. Now we move on to some callers. Lori, armed with a variety of subjects and for whom Norm gives an assignment. Judy, with the call in progress. And Daryl from Boston. Before Norm signs off for the night, we get an AccuWeather forecast with a live field check. That meant Norm turned his chair around and looked out the window. Get ready for the countdown for episode 67. Where's the Beef begins in 3, 2, and 1.
Warm weather.
Yeah.
This is, the weather's nice now, but hey, there's a storm brewing and it's not going to last forever. Well, screw you. I don't care. I mean, can't you take one day at a time? Who cares what's going to be three days from now? I'm not going to start worrying about that. I got bills to pay. I got all kinds of things to worry about. You think I'm going to worry about weather that's going to be about 72 hours off when you clowns can't even predict weather for 2 days hence?
It's so true.
Oh, it goes on and on. I see, you know, guys I like Bruce Schwegler's a nice man. But the other day when he came on in the midst of that warm spell on Channel 4 and was saying, the weather's nice, however, you know, I thought, oh, come on, Bruce, for God's sakes. I mean, let's live for today, and today's going to be nice. I don't care what 3 days from now. You know, 3 days from now is 3 days closer to spring. Why don't, you know, you worry about it. I'm not going to do that. But they all do that. It's like trying to create a story where none exists out of weather. And then the anchor people with their smart ad-libs. So thank you so much. God bless you for giving us this swell weather. It just makes you kind of sick. I think a lot of people who work in television ought to be banished to Siberia someplace. Thank you very much. Thank you for letting me get that off my chest.
That was a great bit. That really was.
I wasn't even thinking of it as a bit. I just, you just sit here and you watch those things so much of the time, and it gets so silly. You just want to, scream. You just want to scream about them.
And I heard you say before, and I agree with you, they go on and on. Isn't there any more news that they could tell us, or must they give all of that time to the weather? Can they simply not say it will rain tomorrow or it will not rain
tomorrow? Well, that's what I think they should
do. And then get on with the news.
Yeah, just say, isn't that a nice day?
You tuned in on Nathan, he's one of the greats. Right here on BZ, reaching 38 cents. I'm singing this song so you'll know. It's time for your Nathan show. When the day-to-day world starts to drive you insane, and you feel like you're riding on a runaway train, your makes you laugh. Tune in 10:30 and call Norm tonight. He's hey out there in radio land. You tuned in on Nathan and he's at your command. So stay here and listen, then you'll understand. He's a habit you'll never outgrow. But right now, no Nathan show. I said, right now, no Nathan show. Here's Norm.
Hello, I'm sorry, I was kind of expecting a big, huge round of applause or something of the... No, never mind, it's okay, you forget it, I don't take umbrage. I'm taking all your names and addresses, and you'll never get invited back to the teen canteen ever again. Anyway, I am Norm Nathan. That was really a witty opening to a show, wasn't it? Makes you not want to hear the rest of what's going on. I hope that's not true, because we have some interesting people. I will be talking in just a moment with a man named Barnaby Conrad, who... owned a nightclub, a salon or saloon in San Francisco back in the 50s and 60s. 50s.
All these astounding things, Book of the Month Club and the front page of the New York Times Literary Review and all that stuff. But the most impressive thing to me was when I picked up the Saturday Review of Literature. And they had asked, it was at the end of the year, and they'd asked some famous writers what their favorite book that they'd read all year was, and after John Steinbeck's name, it said Matador. I just couldn't believe it, so I wrote Mr. Steinbeck, and just a gushy letter, I'm sure, of appreciation, and he wrote back, and I can quote it from memory, of course. He said, wrote back and said, "Dear Conrad, I like bullfighting. To me, it is a lonely, formal, anguished microcosm of what happens to every man, even in an office. Strangled by the glue on the envelopes. In the bull ring, he manages to survive for a while, sometimes. P.S., my wife and I are going to the Virgin Islands next week. Won't you join us?"
And of course you did.
Did I? Would I? And we became great friends. And he came in. Then I started the Matador a few months later. And then he, whenever he was in California, he'd come to the Matador. And it was a great friend and wonderful of friendship.
And was that just before he wrote Travels with Charlie?
That's right. And then he brought Charlie around, and I remember the wonderful last meeting. Last time I saw him was Charlie was sitting there very beaten in the corner, and
Charlie, we must point out, is a dog.
A poodle, yeah.
Yeah.
And he was sitting with Howard Gossage, who was a famous advertising man, and Howard Gossage had this terrible stammer, and John Steinbeck had this kind of malocclusion, and he talked like this. So I just wish I had a recording device, because the following dialogue went on. He said that Steinbeck said, "Howard, look at that poor dog over. Look at Charlie." He said, "Yesterday we were up in the Muir Woods and the Redwoods, and that dog lifted his leg on a tree that was 50 feet across and 150 feet high and 2,000 years old. And I ask you, Howard, what's left in life for that poor dog?" And Gossage said, "Well, John, he can always teach."
I know, that's funny. You've got a
lot of... That's the kind of conversation that we'd get in the Matador sometimes, not all the time.
Now, you have a lot of lovely, very, very funny stories like that. And you had one, for example, about the Bing Crosby, who hated his toupee.
Yeah.
And wanted to, if you're going to take any pictures, just take him with his hat on.
He hated that rug,
It's kind of funny, because I always thought that Bob Hope was the guy with the rug, and he was not, but it was just the other way around, apparently.
Oh, yeah. He went every place bald, except when he felt that somebody was going to take some pictures, and he'd put the thing on reluctantly.
And
he was a great guy.
You describe him as being very shy.
I think he was didn't have many close friends, and most people thought him as so gregarious and everything, and he was with the public. He seemed jovial and so forth, but he was shy and had very few friends, and I was very flattered that he considered me a friend, and he'd call up the spur of the moment, say, hey, let's go to the prize fight. He loved sports, knew a great deal about sports. He was a scratch golfer. People don't realize that, but he was a scratch golfer.
I don't even know what that means.
That means that he played without a handicap.
Oh, I see.
And that means he was almost professional. And he followed the races. He loved horses. He loved the fishing. He was a great fisherman. We'd go fishing and hunting, and he was a wonderful storyteller. I love the story he told about Joe Frisco. Joe Frisco was a guy that hung around the races, and he was a comedian. And he had a stammer, a lifelong stammer. And Bing saw him at the races one day, and Joe Frisco came up and said, "Bing, listen, I got the hottest to tip. It's 40-1." And he said, "You got to lend me $50 to bet on it." So Bing, always a soft touch, peeled off $50, gave it to him, and by gosh, the horse came in. And Bing went up to the owners, were up to the club room afterwards, and there was Joe Frisco sitting with a jeroboam of champagne in front of him and two gorgeous blondes on either arm sitting there and with his feet up on the table. And Bing came in, and Joe Frisco pulled out this wad of dough that he'd won and peeled off $50 and flourished it and said, "Hey, boy, give us a chorus of melancholy, baby, baby."
Now, Bing Crosby, because the stories went around about the unhappiness his kids had with him,
yep,
in his first family, you sort of suggest that maybe he was aware of not maybe being the greatest parent in the world to his first group, but when he remarried and had some other children later on, maybe he was decided to make amends for all of
that's,
that.
That's true. He was a wonderful father to the second batch of three kids, Mary Frances, Nathaniel, and Harry. And I saw evidence of them because I did portraits of the kids. They were just wonderful children. And he took them drove them to school every day and everything, which was in stark contrast to the fact that the boys that he had by Dixie, the first boys, had terrible lives and accused him of being a terrible father and an overly rigid father and abusive father and so forth. None of which he was with the second batch.
Lenny Bruce now gets a lot of space and stories. I don't know how many people listening, young people particularly, are aware of Lenny Bruce. It's kind of hard to realize that he's been gone for some time now, but was had a startling effect on the comedy world.
Yeah,
he did. And you got to know him.
Yeah, he was just down the street. So in between his performances, he'd come in and sit in my place, you know. I loved the time when I called Lenny. He was a sweet man, and except one time I called him up and I didn't realize I called him up at 8:30 or 9 in the morning, you know, forgetting his hours. And I called up and I said, "Gee, I said I hope I didn't wake you up, Lenny." And he said, "Oh, hell no, man. I always get up 13 hours before I go to work."
No, to have some, of all the people to do that would be you at a club. Anyway, and realize what kind of hours are involved.
Yeah.
I know you made the passing reference to your diplomatic career, and that was as a vice consul?
Yeah, I was American vice consul in Sevilla and Malaga during the war. I had a very tough war. I couldn't get it because I was gored by a bull in Mexico when I was 18. I had this bad leg, and I couldn't get in the service, so I went in the diplomatic service.
And now what are you doing now? And why did the Matador close in 1963?
Well, I realized that I was in a bad marriage, and I was hoping for the perfect girl to walk in one day, which I think is the basic reason anybody opens a restaurant when you get right down to it. Anyways, one day she did, and I married her, and it must have been 30 years ago, because we have a 30-year-old girl, so it must have been 31 years ago.
Okay.
She's a top model all over the country.
Okay.
All over the world.
Oh, really? Would we know her name?
You've seen her a million times, but her name is Kendall Conrad, and these models don't usually get their names in the papers, but...
Okay, because we seem to be in an era when some of the so-called supermodels appearing...
Well, she's not one of that handful of 10 supermodels whose names do mean something, but she works all the time.
Okay, you also a co-director and founder of the Santa Barbara Writers Conference, and Are you writing some new books right now too?
Yeah, I'm writing another novel, and it'll be my 26th book, I guess. And but the writers' conference takes up a lot of time too, as you say. It only takes a week. It takes place a week in the last week in June, in Santa Barbara. But it takes all year to prepare for it. And my wife does most of the work, and I get most of the credit, which is the way it's supposed to be, isn't it, Norman?
Oh yeah.
And we have the top writers in the country. We've come and speak to 300 would-be writers who pay to come, and we take over this whole hotel here, the Hotel Miramar in Santa Barbara, and then for a week, these people, aspirin writers, the average age is about 40, I guess, and they get to rub elbows and pick the brains of such writers as Eudora Welty and William Styron and Ray Bradbury and so forth. Mm. The top writers in the country. It's been going for 23 years now, believe it or not.
Oh,
and Ray Bradbury has come for 23 years, and so has Charles Schulz of Snoopy fame.
Oh, yeah.
He's coming back again this year, and so it's a very exciting week.
And it's an exciting book. Name dropping is a lot of fascinating stories about a lot of people. We just, you know, barely.
We can't even tell some of the stories, can we, Norman? Nevin stories. We can't.
I think that's right. That's right. Oh, you mentioned Truman Capote when somebody had asked him. He's talking in terms of. Oh, a woman had said autograph the midriff.
Yep, my tummy.
And the rest of the tummy. That is, she was wearing a midriff, and she wanted him autograph the. Anyway, their husband came, and let's see, how can we put this delicately? He said he opened his pants and said, "Would you autograph this?"
Yeah.
And Truman Capote said, "I don't know why I'm quoting you."
Well, he looked at it and said, "Well, Mister, maybe I could initial that, but I could never autograph it."
That's right. I know.
And he said, "Boy, that fixed him."
I know it. Yeah. That's funny. Hey, Barney, thank you very, very much for coming on the
show.
Thank you. I apologize for the kind of loose opening, but I'm delighted to have talked with you. Again, the book is called Name Dropping, Tales from My Barbary Coast Saloon. And as I read this, I kept thinking, boy, I wish there were a place like that around here.
Somebody said, don't you think of starting another one, and I said, well, we'd have to call it Nostalgia or Geriatrics or something, but my feeling is I've been there, done that, but it was great while it lasted.
Okay, thanks a lot, and
best
wishes to you.
Thanks an awful lot.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate talking to you. Bye-bye. Okay, Barnaby Jones. It's not Barnaby Jones. Who's Barnaby Jones? Barnaby Conrad, my name-dropping tales from my Barbary Coast saloon. Anyway, I'm Norman.
To Foxwoods Resort Casino Thursday night, December 15th, for a WBA junior flyweight title bout with Eric Griffin against Carlos Murillo, plus a tough undercard. Call 1-800-PLAY-BIG at Foxwoods.
Yeah, we're having a lot of fun with it.
Okay, I'm just checking my facts with you, make sure that what I say is absolutely accurate. You know how we are here in Boston about those things. Okay. Anyway, how long you been in the Buffalo business?
Actually, we've been in it about 2 years. We researched it about for six, 8 months, and then we decided it was a very great opportunity, and then so we jumped in with both feet.
How do you research something like that? How do you check to know whether or not what you're doing is right in that area?
Well, basically what we did is we went to other ranchers that had raised some for a number of years on a smaller scale and learned a lot from them. And then we checked with the ranchers like in Montana, South Dakota, Wyoming, and went to a show in Denver at the Denver Western Show. And the last 3 days of that show is a Buffalo conference, and a last Saturday is a Buffalo auction. And I went there and met a lot of producers and gained a lot of information and insight into the industry and found out, yes, this is a real business, and it's established, and the market is very strong. And so when we had that all put together, we decided, let's go get into the Buffalo business. And there was a ranch available in Oregon that was selling his herd, and we made a deal on the Buffalo and purchased them and brought them up to our ranch. And it was a very exciting day when my mother who at the time was 84 at the time, and she saw us bring them here, and she became very excited, and she bought 12 of them herself later on.
Really? Now, what did you do on that ranch before you got to Buffalo?
We basically do two things. We raise cattle, and we farm wheat and barley and oats. And so that became a very low profit in the farming end of it. So what we're doing is converting some of that farm ground, planting it back to grass, and then taking that grass and utilizing it for buffalo pasture. And eventually, when we get enough, we'll be able to feed them in the wintertime without feeding them hay, because they're very good foragers. That was their natural instinct in the wild, and they didn't get, of course, fed hay then, and they survived and done very well. So that is our game plan.
Now, how much land do you have?
Our ranch is about 13,000 acres.
Wow.
So we can run a lot more buffalo than we have now. We're just getting our fences built, establishing, getting a good rapport with the buffalo, understanding them, learn their habits, and see where the market is, and that we're kind of growing with them as they grow with us.
The Associated Press story that I saw said that you had about 250 head of buffalo?
Yeah, that's about right. We're somewhere between 250 and 300, and the reason I say that is we buy a few and sell a few from time to time, and into the marketplace. We are trying to build up, of course, gather more cows and heifers. They're the producers, and come up for sale, while we go look at them. If they're the animals we're looking for, then we'll purchase them. And when we're selling some of the bulls that go into the marketplace, and they'll go, we ship some to South Dakota, and they put them and they feed them a little while. They condition them. We don't say fatten them, because we condition them for market.
Now, you breed cattle, the buffalo also?
Yes. We and they're quite a bit different than cattle, we found out. One of the major differences is that the animals have a normal breeding cycle. The bulls go into a rut like wild animals do, and their rut season runs in July, August, and September in our area. And so that means the calves are born like April, May, June, which is a much warmer time of the year than cattle, and we don't have any calving problems because the calves are born about one-third to one-half the size of cattle. And so the very ease there, and that takes your mind off that. And, of course, you couldn't go out and pull one of those buffalo calves if you wanted to. It'd be hard to corral one. So that we'd like very, very much.
I'm just trying to think of how you fence in 12,000 acres?
Well, what we did, we just took a portion of it. We take a portion of it. We do like a half a section, which is 320 acres or at a time, and break it into smaller sections. And then we'll take that and fence it in, and we use what's called New Zealand high tensile fence, which is an electric fence. And basically we found that we only need it like about 5 foot high. And we put six wires on, and the second and fourth wire from the bottom are insulated, and that's where we put our electric charger, which is a little shocking, intermittent shocking, that they touch that, and it trains them, and it leaves it in their mind that, hey, this hurts, and electric shock, and they stay away from it.
Okay, so you just need it 5 feet high, because buffalo, I can't imagine a buffalo jumping very high.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, I didn't think so either. But what we found out in the buffalo is that they're the most athletic animal I've ever run across in my life. I've been around a lot of animals, horses, and so forth. But they when you look at them, they look like they're kind of slow and wandering, but they are absolutely very quick and very, very good on their feet and very athletic. And they've got extremely good ears and eyes. And and they've got an extremely good nose, so they have the very senses that they need to survive in the wild. But the thing that we found out is, long as you keep water and feed within that boundaries, they get to know the boundaries, and they stay in there. They have no reason to leave.
Okay, but they can jump. You said they can jump fairly high.
They can. They can jump 6 feet very easy.
Oh, wow. I wouldn't.
With your animal.
It's kind of funny, because just looking looking at them or looking at pictures, I tell you the truth, I've never actually seen a buffalo, in reality.
Uh-huh.
But just the pictures of them look like they couldn't jump more than 2 feet.
I know that. You're right. You're absolutely right. But like I said, once you've been around them and you say, oh, they can't do this, can't do that. But they're so athletic and so quick. Extremely quick. Matter of fact, there was a gentleman that runs some against some quarter horses at these fairs and so forth, and they run 100 yards, and they start him out of a starting gate, and he won approximately 80% of the races.
that's amazing. Now these, of course, I hate to say it this way, but these buffalo are doomed in a sense, because you raise them for a buffalo steak and all that, and for eating.
Yeah, we raise them both. We raise them for breeding. And where we get the animals that we market is the animals, the bulls. And so we don't decrease any production. We only need one bull and 10 for breeding purposes. So that makes the other 9 bulls become marketable for meat. And we market them as young animals. And so the concept in the industry is that we want the consumer to have a good tasting animal. So, like if you went to a restaurant and you had a bad piece of beef, you would blame, oh, that's just a bad piece of meat. But if you went to a restaurant and had a bad piece of buffalo, you'd say, oh, that buffalo's no good. See, so you're blaming the industry. So we just select very young animals up to 30, 36 months old is max. And those are the ones that are marketed for the meat industry that the restaurants get. And there's quite a few restaurants established now that do serve the buffalo meat. And it's very, very tasty. The people have learned how to cook it. It doesn't have the fat content, and that's what sells it. It's only 3% fat versus beef is around 20-25%.
Yes,
and it's just as tender. It's a bit sweeter, and it has a third less cholesterol, a third less calories, and it has half again as much protein. So all of those, are very much beneficial for one's diet.
And it helps you jump over a 5-foot fence.
Right. Then you can jump over a 5-foot fence.
Do you cook it differently than you would cook, say, beef from a cow?
Very definitely. It doesn't have the marbling, which means marbling. It doesn't have the interlaying of fat within the meat fibers. So what you have, you don't have to cook the fat in the meat. So you turn the temperature down a little bit lower, and it doesn't take as near as long to cook.
Are there many restaurants on the East Coast that serve buffalo meat? I'm trying to think of some. I'm not sure of any here.
It would be probably there are some restaurants. As a matter of fact, there's buffalo in every state, and there. But there's you won't find them very readily, probably. But I know there are some in your area. I'm sure that do serve buffalo meat from time to time. And I've heard of it anyhow, and practically in all the major cities. So Boston should have at least one or two restaurants that would cater to buffalo meat.
Okay, and I know that there are places in New England where people raise buffalo also. Do you have an organization that, where you know other buffalo?
Yeah, we have an organization that's called the American Bison Association, and it's located in Denver, Colorado. That's the headquarters. And it's been in existence since about the late 70s, about 1978.
Okay, and do you know if there are people in New England who belong to that? Because I think there are people here who raise buffalo.
Definitely, there are people. Yes, there's very definitely people in your area that and the surrounding area that do belong to that association and that do raise buffalo. Very definitely. And I think the matter of fact, the president of the new elected president is from Connecticut. Of the American Bison Association.
Okay, it's kind of interesting. There are a lot of animals that are being raised now. I guess maybe buffalo is not one of the newest, but you don't think of people raising buffalo too recently.
Uh-huh.
But I was just thinking of other animals. What am I thinking? Llamas, for example. I think there are llama farms and all that kind of stuff now, and all kinds of exotic animals. I know this doesn't tie in with the buffalo, mm-hmm. but I'm thinking we're seeing more and more unusual animals or animals that we haven't seen much of being raised now that we never saw before.
Yeah, and part of the reason is people are, especially the farming and agriculture is becoming very, very the margins are very slim, and some of there's no profit at all. So people are looking for something else to earn a profit, and some of the exotic the big birds have been very popular for that, making money, and also utilizing their facilities. But what has happened there, as I see, is that is more like a breeder's market. You get in there first, and long as you can sell to another breeder, very fine. But what that industry doesn't have is they don't have a meat market established. So therefore, when you run out of breeders, then the price is going to fall down. Where the buffalo has an established meat industry, the meat is basically related to what you can get for your buffalo bulls, and then it's also related to what the animals sell for the breeding stock. So we have it, the industry is well established versus some of the others that's more just in the breeding end of it.
What is your life like? You're pretty remote, you know, obviously, if you're talking that many thousands of acres.
Not really. We are we're only about 18 miles from a town of about 8,000, Cheney, Washington. And we're 35 miles from Spokane, a town of about, 250,000. So we're like 50 minutes from Spokane, and it's really not that isolated. But probably according to the area, it might be a little isolated, yes.
Okay, do you have a lot of people working for you? Do you need many people to tend to buffalo, this many buffalo?
No, that's one of the real things that we like, is that we don't need a lot of people. We take care of it ourselves. Once you get your fences built, your system set up, the animals basically take care of themselves, and that's what we really like about it. We don't have the calving problems. They take care of, like in the winter now, we're having some cold weather. Well, cold, it's in the 20s. And so the water troughs freeze over, but we have some snow on the ground, and the animals, if the water trough's not broken when they drink water, they'll eat snow and survive very well. So that's a real plus there, where the cattle can't do that. Cattle would starve on that.
Okay, so they can eat snow, and that supplies the liquid.
Yes, that supplies the liquid for them, yes. So that's a big plus there. So, you don't lose animals that way. And then I'll tell you, in a cold winter, they really survive. A veterinarian told me once that raises buffalo, he said, the big difference between cattle and buffalo is that cattle are producers and buffalo are survivors.
Okay. Hey, you're an interesting man. That's the whole area. I may just start raising buffalo myself here.
You should.
I know she's not feeling well, and I've got to be concerned about it.
So you say, be a smart mouth. Yell at me. Do something really rotten. Don't just sit there and be passive. And just, be... I want somebody with spirit.
Oh, yeah, and she's very, very bright. And she's taught me a lot of stuff.
Oh, that's... What kind of work does she do?
She does editing for lawyers and this sort of thing. It's... one of these home cottage industries that a lot of people do.
Yeah.
And she's basically been an English major and all that kind of thing, and been in library science, and I've learned a good deal. And she teaches her son, who is my stepson. She has, since the time he was very young, read to him the classics, Sherlock Holmes, those kinds of things, so that he's grown up having some appreciation of literature, and he's a voracious reader.
And how old is he?
He's now 15.
Oh, then okay, nice. Well, that's great.
But he grew up with that tradition, and kids will emulate what they're taught by their parents.
Absolutely.
And that's when I was before I gave it up 8 years ago. That was how I picked up smoking. I got it from my father. But there were a couple of points that I did want to bring up. That very interesting man that you had on from Washington State was talking about raising buffalo, which I knew nothing about like you do. Have you ever had it used as Hamburg beefalo?
No, I've heard of it, but I never have tried it, no.
It's very, very good. It tastes a lot like Hamburg, and it's extremely lean.
Now, what is that? Is that a combination of beef meat and buffalo meat?
Yeah, well, they breed them together.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, that's how that goes on. I think they're doing a lot of that in Vermont.
What an interesting little exhibition that would be, seeing them breathing. I don't think I want to watch.
Well, I've seen pictures of them. There's this large health food chain, which I'm sure you know around, that does sell beefalo, and I've seen pictures of these animals, and they look very strange.
Yeah.
And the meat is very lean. It's very good tasting. I've never had a buffalo steak, but I think if it were available, I would try it.
Okay, maybe somebody listening and knows exactly where you can get one, and maybe will call and tell us, because I'm not even aware of that.
No, and so long as people raise animals, and I look at things differently than some people do. That if you're raising animals for meat, I'm perfectly willing to eat it. But if people go out and shoot it for sport, I'm not particularly interested.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on that. That's true. I'm not a vegetarian, so I do eat meat. So it would be hypocritical to say I don't like the way they slaughter animals or something. If you don't like that, then don't eat meat. But although I think most vegetarians are vegetarians not because of that kind of moral issue. It's mostly because they feel that vegetables and things are much more healthful than meat, which they feel is not.
And that's fine. You know, I think that's a perfectly legitimate attitude. However, for instance, I have a tendency not to eat veal because of the way the animals are kept and that they don't have a good life. And
that's right.
I don't particularly like that. That's my own personal opinion.
No, that's true. You could say the same thing about chickens. In many cases, they're raised just for food, and they're jammed together, and they don't lead much of a life either. They don't see the sunlight. They're all in coops and that kind of stuff. So if you feel that way about veal, you may feel that way about chickens, too.
Well, we get our chickens basically from the food store, which serves chickens natural grains, and they're free-running chickens.
Okay.
So we do that. But there are a couple of things I wanted to bring up. For instance, that very interesting gentleman who was talking about past lives, that fellow was 34 years old, that very nice young man. I hate to think of him as 34 because I'm old enough to be his father. But
are you? You don't sound that.
Well, I'm 56.
Oh, you sound much younger than that.
Bless you, my son.
Well, don't overdo that.
But, you know, he was talking about occupations and stuff that have gone by. I can remember when I was very small in the 40s, waiting for the man to come by to deliver fuel so I could stand down in there in the cellar and watch them put the coal chute down into the bin.
Yeah, that's right.
And watch that being delivered. And another occupation that has gone by that I remember so vividly was the Iceman, because there were some people in my neighborhood who still had ice boxes and did not have electric refrigerators.
Yeah. Now, that's true. While the guy was inside delivering the ice, and these poor souls, they put that little sheet, the rubber sheet across their back and grab the ice and carry it up, so maybe three flights.
Yeah, and these
anyway,
big
while
tongs.
They, what's that?
And these big tongs.
That's right, the big tongs that hold them, and, you know, and while they were gone, you have an ice pick, and you chip away at some ice that was already there on a hot summer day.
Oh,
like
I
a
remember
like
that.
A big
yeah,
ice cube,
I forgot
yeah.
about that.
Oh yeah, boy, that ice tasted great.
Well, we were the people that had an electric refrigerator. So
you're one of the wealthy guys.
Well, I look at the ice boxes with some curiosity. This was late in the war, I would say. I would say this was about 1944, 5, when I really started to get to the point where I remember things. I was born in 38. And so I was 6 or 7 at the time, and that's getting to the point where you start to remember things in some detail.
Oh, yeah. As we've often said, you can remember things that happened way back then, even though you can't remember what happened about a week ago. We had a family next to us. Now, we had an ice box, and also a little kind of an insulated box that was outside the pantry window. I don't even know how many people have pantries anymore, but this would be outside for the wintertime. So you'd open your own the window and then slide open the door of this, but it would stay cold because of the cold weather.
Right.
So you didn't eat ice for that, but you need ice in the ice box, and all kinds of jokes came out of that. It's kind of funny that the jokes that arise out of certain situations, even though the situations don't exist anymore, we'd say things like, you know, I've seen better looking pans, which was a nickname for a face. I seen better-looking pans underneath an icebox.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that kind of a joke wouldn't make any sense to any young person today who doesn't remember iceboxes or the pans where the ice melted, and then you had to empty that out, and that
oh,
kind
no,
of stuff.
Oh, no, I can't think of one off the top of my head. Had I been prepared, I could have come up with several that just don't make sense to my stepson.
Okay, what I want you to do is accept that as an assignment, okay, Laurie, and jot them down next time. So next time we talk, I want a whole lot of jokes that make no sense to young people because the situations that in which they arose do not exist anymore.
Oh, well, I'll do that. But there are two other items I wanted to bring up before before I get checked out here.
Okay.
The first is that I'm not sure that I'm going to be able to call you before the holidays, but if I don't, I want to wish you the merriest of holidays.
I wish you
a really neat time.
I hope you do too, Laura. That's very nice of you.
And the other thing is that you remember that one time we spent a long time talking about the high-lows.
Yes.
Well, I don't want to get into that again, of course, because people don't know, but there are three CDs now that have been released since I last talked to you on the high-lows, and the one that you should look into, which I think is their best, especially since you're a jazz buff, is the CD, The High-Lows and All That Jazz.
Okay.
And I think that you should look into that because you would love it.
No, I do have that as an LP when it first came out.
Well, now it's available on disc, on compact disc, and the transfer is excellent.
Okay, we'll look that up. Thank you very much for the information, Mr.
Lowe. Oh, you're quite welcome, Norm. And I wish you the happiest of holidays, and I know you've got to get off because it's
thank you.
Time.
Yeah, it is just about that time. Merry Christmas to you, Laurie. Thanks
Merry
a million.
Merry Christmas to you, too, Norm.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, we'll take some more calls after the news because that's the kind of people that we are. Thank you so much. Or Dawn Patrol. That was a very big one for morning shows. And that'd be Dinner Time Serenade. But you never had your name on a program. Somehow they just never thought that was worthy of whatever the radio station was at the time. Now we go from dinner time melodies to evening serenade. And we had one program called Music at Day's End at one of the stations I worked for. But this is the Norm Nathan Show. I think there's something kind of sexy about that title. I really do like that. In the morning, then, whenever she gets up.
XYL.
Know what that means?
No.
That means a former young lady. It doesn't mean that she's an old lady, but a YL, for example, is an unmarried young lady.
Uh-huh.
And an XYL means she's an ex. She's no longer an unmarried lady. She's a married lady.
Right.
So, because we used to go up and down the dial, we'd say, hello, this is W1OMP, W1 Old Man's Paradise.
Is that right?
Scanning the dial and looking for for YLs and so whatever it might be, you know. Yeah, you know, I never was licensed to be a ham operator, but a friend of mine was, and so we used to have a lot of fun with that.
In fact, Lobby bought one of her radios.
Really?
And when she changed, you know, she went to a better radio.
Okay, well now is Laurie or his wife, are they ham radio operators?
No, Laurie is.
Oh, Laurie is a ham operator?
Yeah,
he is. I didn't know that. Yeah. Okay, I'll have to hit him with that next time.
Right. But you know what I call for now?
Yes. No, I don't. Actually, I don't know.
One night you were talking to somebody, called you up, and asked you if you had ever heard of Knuckles O'Toole.
I recall that.
And you said, no, I never heard of him.
And that's true also. I did
and
say
he
that.
He says that he wanted to get this music for his father who lived in England or Ireland or someplace.
Oh, Knuckles O'Toole, the musicians.
Yes.
So people called after that and explained about Knuckles O'Toole. And apparently I was the only one who's listening to my own program who didn't know about Knuckles O'Toole, because an awful lot of people did know about him.
Well, what must have happened after that? I must have fallen asleep.
Yeah, they called and they talked about his music and where to get it and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I was going to send you a tape of his music after the holidays.
Well, I would love to get that, too, if you wouldn't mind doing that.
Yeah, I don't mind.
Okay, well, I think that'd be great, Eddie.
After all, but it was nice tonight. I'm hanging on here and I'm listening to Laurie talking to you. And I haven't heard from Laurie in ages.
Okay, well, if he's still listening, I hope he called you. Does he know how to get in touch with you?
Yeah, because you know what happened? He got married, and that was the end of it.
Oh, he's devoting his entire life to helping his wife clean the house.
Right.
And he figures, I'll call him maybe when I finish the kitchen floor. Then she maybe gives him some other stuff to do, and he just doesn't get around to it.
Yeah, like I said, he came to some of the banquets. We used to have banquets twice a year for the kids in the high school band. And my kids were in the high school band, and we were running these parties. And Larry would come all the time.
Sorry. Sometimes guys get married and you never see them again. It's like that old song, you know, wedding bells are breaking up this old gang of mine.
Right, right.
Sometimes you get along with your boyhood friend or something. Then they marry somebody, she doesn't like you or you don't like her, and it kind of spoils it.
Right.
And it's kind of changes the relationship. But Laurie sounds like a nice guy, and so do you. So I hope you get together again.
He is. He's a nice guy. Believe me when I tell you that.
Okay, that's lovely. I've read that.
Did you read it?
That's written partly by him and partly by his daughter, Joan.
What did you think of it?
I thought it was kind of fun. I thought one of the funny things, because she said she found some papers of his, and he was apparently in the process of writing a book, and he didn't finish it, and so she finished it for him in a sense. Mm-hmm. But she talks about this cheap character that he has developed. Well, he's not a cheap, he never was a cheap man,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
but the character was so inbred that she talked about him going to a nightclub and tipping the hat check girl. Mm-hmm. And the hat check girl said, please don't do that, Mr. Benny. Leave me with my illusions.
I know.
She wanted to, obviously everybody wanted to believe he really was the way he was on radio and television and stuff. I'm a wild Jack Benny fan.
I know
fan.
You are.
I thought he was just, he and Fred Allen and a few others were just so superb that I really fell apart one day when I found out he died. It was like I lost my father.
That's the way I felt, because, you know, from the time I was a very little kid, Sunday night, everything got quiet. 7 o'clock, don't bother us, listen to the radio.
Mm.
And he shares our ideas on radio, that it does definitely leave more to the imagination.
Oh, there's no question about that.
And it isn't as restrictive as television to work with. I didn't know that his wife was a relative of the Marx brothers.
That's right. Yeah, I'd forgotten about that.
Sadie Marx, her name was.
That's right.
And the other thing it was his development of playing the violin and his interest. But the thing that got me was when he heard jokes that he liked, he would beat his hand on the table.
No, every comic says he was the greatest audience in the world.
Yeah, and he enjoyed seeing other comics.
Yeah, he loved that. He loved to laugh, and he loved to encourage other comics. He just enjoyed what they said. Would get the book, and it's called Sunday Nights, you know, is at 7. And it's a fun book, anyway.
It is.
I think it's out.
The library has it.
I think it's out in paperback also. Now I'm not. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. I just want to take one more phone call. So I just want to go.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot. I just happened to wake up and I have a cold, so I'm wide awake, and it's great hearing fun stuff.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Judy,
enjoy.
For calling. Always a joy talking.
Good yontif and a good and happy New Year.
Same to you. Thank you very much. Okay, let's go to Daryl in Boston. Hi, good morning. How you doing, Daryl?
Oh, I'm doing fine. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, I like to hear all these things about the city, the old days.
Yeah.
The down Scully Square and all over the city. By the way, can you remember what you forgot?
Can I remember what I forgot?
Uh-huh.
You have to give me a clue, because I'm not... You're leading into something there, and I'm not sure what that is.
No, that's just a joke.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Oh, shame on me for not catching on to a joke.
Yeah, you got lost that time. Lost the fish.
I did. I did lose the fish.
Yeah. I do have an interesting announcement for today.
Okay.
The Lutheran and Catholics are having a service at the Cathedral on Washington Street. At 2:30 is a discussion hour, and at 4 o'clock is a worship service. The Cardinal will be leading the liturgy, and Bishop Robert Isaacson will be preaching this sermon.
Okay, now this is which church?
The cathedral down at Holy Cross Cathedral.
Oh, the Holy Cross Cathedral. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Okay. That's on the south end, is it not?
That's right.
Yeah, okay, because you said Washington Street's at the other end.
Yeah.
People think of Washington Street as downtown, and, of course, Washington Street extends quite a distance beyond.
Oh, you can say that again.
Okay, I think it's the longest street in Massachusetts.
I believe it is.
Yeah, because it just continues way, way into Roxbury and all that.
Rosendale, even.
Yeah, that's right. Now, tell me, what time is this again?
2:30 is the discussion hour. And then at 4 o'clock is a worship service.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They did this about 8 years ago, too. And now they have another one today. They, Lutheran and Catholics, are having dialogues together all the time.
Okay, well, that's great.
It's very interesting.
Are you going?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, good for you. Daryl, thanks a lot for the information. I appreciate it. I wish you a happy Christmas.
Yeah, you too. Have a very, very, very holiday.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Bye-bye, Daryl. Okay, it's almost time to say goodbye. Let me check the weather for you again. Hold on a minute. I'm going to do another field check. Ooh, you see how that's raining out there? I swear my car's been washed away from the parking lot. It is really coming down fiercely. They got to be, I bet, with that talking about flooding and poor drainage areas, I'll bet some of the basements are filled with water now. This is really rough. Anyway, let's see. What happens today? Clearing late as the day goes on, and windy with steady or falling temperatures during the afternoon. Clear, windy, and much colder tonight, Sunday night, with low temperatures about 22. Monday, sunny, but windy and cold, highs 32. Tuesday, variable cloudiness, slight chance of a period of snow flurries, and snow or flurries, highs 36. The temperature at the moment is 44 degrees. It has been steadily going up over the past few hours, but it is raining very, very heavily. And our producer, plus the lovely Marilyn Garonick and myself, the almost son of a gun, if I kind of missed it again today, the almost good-looking Norm Nathan person. I hope today is really nice for you. I was going to suggest you stay dry, but that's kind of a stupid thing to say because it is raining like fury. Anyway, bye-bye, old sport, from WBZ.
Because I have to do some Christmas shopping, I'm going to close the vault and ride the radio waves to the mall. For Bruce Schwegler, Matadors and Saloon Keepers, Barnaby Conrad, Kendall Conrad, the Santa Barbara's Writers Conference, Foxwoods, the American Bison Association, Ice Boxes, the High Lows, Ham Radios, Knuckles O'Toole, the Quiet Kids who'll never be invited back to the Teen Canteen, and the almost good-looking Norm Nathan person, I'm Tony Nesbitt.